So my name is Greg. I'm one of the pastors here, and we're just super excited about this series that we've been in. It's a series that we're calling In the Desert, and we've been looking at this tagline that's been in the series, that the hardest things form the greatest stuff in us. Or another way of saying that is the greatest stuff that gets formed inside of us, the greatest things that God uses to shape and to mold us, or that have a way of shaping and molding us, often happen by the hardest stuff that we go through in life. And there are a lot of taglines that come along with that sort of stuff that we've heard before that makes sense to us because of life's experiences. Things like flowers don't grow on the mountaintop, they grow in the valley, and go like, we got it. Things that say like if it doesn't break you, it's gonna make you, and like, yeah, I get that. It'll make me a different person if I go through this, and these hard things are like enough pressure can take coal and turn it into a diamond. And we know that because we can read stories of people that have gone through some really, really tough stuff and look at their life and how their life was used powerfully because of what they went through. Or we could think about our own lives, things that we've been through that have changed us, shaped us, and stuff sometimes that we just, man, I don't want to go through that. I don't want any part of that. I wish this didn't show up at my doorstep and invite itself in, but it did, and here it is in my life, and now how do I move through this? And when we move through that, sometimes limping, sometimes crawling through that stuff, it has a way, if we allow those moments to really reflect on them, to think about them, and to really think about, now who am I in light of all this, it has a way of shaping us and doing some great work in us. I think sometimes it makes us begin to question some big questions, and maybe some of your life's biggest questions have come in those moments. I mean, if you think about the biggest things you have ever asked of God, maybe the biggest thing that you ever asked God, it probably came right in the middle of one of the hardest times of your life. And then there are those times that big question that you asked of God, maybe it got answered, maybe it didn't, in a way that you maybe you're asking the why question and you don't know yet. And maybe someday you'll have that question answered, maybe not. But that experience that you went through, sometimes we come out of the backside of that so different that we actually ask God, as a result of this hard stuff doing a great work in us, we ask God for something we never thought we would ever ask of God. We petition God for something bigger than we ever thought we would petition Him for, that could lead us down a road of not just knowing Him better, but being used by Him in a bigger, way bigger way than we ever imagined. And this story that we've been in the Old Testament, it's a story like that. We begin the story with a man named Moses that encounters God. And what we're going to find today, we're going to fast forward through the story and then back up on it. What we find is Moses actually asking a couple things of God that he would have never asked God had it not been for all of his experiences of God. He is asking something of God that he would have never asked God if it wasn't for all the experiences of God that he experienced all the way through the hard stuff that he was facing. So we're going to be in the 33rd chapter of the book of Exodus, Exodus chapter 33. And we're going to read just a few verses on the front end of this, verses 1 through 3. And it's found on page 138 if you'd like to follow along. In the Pew Bible, you can pull it up on your phone or whatever. You can just listen to it as well. And I'm just going to jump into the story, and then we're going to do some back story work with it. So verse 1 of chapter 33. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Leave this place, you and the people you brought up out of Egypt, and go to the land I promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I will send an angel before you to drive out the Canaanites, the Amorites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Go to the land flowing with milk and honey, but I will not go with you. I will not go with you because you are a stiff-necked people and I might destroy you on the way. Fast forward to verse 12 there. Moses said to the Lord, you have been telling me, lead these people, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. You have said, I know you by name, and you have found favor with me. If you are pleased with me, teach me your ways so that I may know you and continue to find favor with you. Remember, this nation is your people. The Lord replied, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. Then Moses said to him, if your presence does not go with us, do not send us up from here. How will anyone know that you are pleased with me and with your people unless you go with us? What else will distinguish me and your people from all the other people on the face of the earth? And the Lord said to Moses, I will do this very thing that you have asked, because I am pleased with you and know you by name. Then Moses said, show me your glory. Moses had two requests in here. One is, I want to know your ways. The other one is, show me your glory. And when we back up in this story, I said we're going to do some back work on this. We back up in this story. It's absolutely fascinating to me that we are in chapter 33 with all of this ask that he's asking of God. I mean, these are some big questions. Show me more of yourself. Show me your way and show me your glory. This is some big stuff that Moses is asking that I don't believe Moses would have ever asked had it not been from all that happened between chapter 3 and chapter 33. 30 chapters of a lot of stuff. And where we began this story a few weeks ago, if this is your first Sunday here in this series, you can go back and you can listen to this stuff, or you can just catch the synopsis here, because what we find is in chapter 3, Moses is having a conversation with God. He doesn't know him. He doesn't know that much about him, but he is conversing with God. And at that point, God told Moses, I'm going to send you back to Egypt. And when we go back to Egypt, so what's the story there? Where Moses started in Egypt, he was born of a Hebrew slave that was among the Israelite nation that was in slavery to the Egyptians. He was taken into the Pharaoh's court and raised by the Pharaoh's family. And so all of the luxury of the land, it was his, everything that he wanted at his disposal, but something was stirring inside of him that made him realize this isn't all right. I'm identifying with the Egyptians, but I am a Hebrew. And one day he watched this taskmaster, an Egyptian taskmaster, beat one of the Hebrews, and he rose up and killed that man. Killed him. And he had to run for his life. And it's out there in a wilderness in a place called Midian that he's having a conversation with God, and God is telling him, I'm sending you back to go lead those people out of slavery. And he's like, I don't think I want to do that. Chapter 3, he's full of insecurity. In chapter 33, we find him bold enough to ask of God. In chapter 3, he's asking God, can I just walk away from this? In chapter 33, he's asking God to step into it with him. In chapter 3, we find him saying, I don't want to do this. And in chapter 33, he says, I don't want to move unless you're coming with us. Chapter 3, God makes it clear to him, I'm the God that is with you. In chapter 33, Moses is saying, I just want to make sure you're going to stay with us. In fact, there are 10 things that I think There's a lot, but just 10 things that took place between chapter 3 and chapter 33 that'll help us grab hold of what was going on the inside of Moses during this hard period of him leaving Midian where he felt safe to go back to Egypt where he didn't feel safe to do the work that God was having him to do. The hardship that he went through did some great stuff in him. And I just wonder this morning if this story might be something for us here, something for me. I've been living with it for a few weeks and thinking to myself, I want to be more like this. I have room in my life that I'm asking God for more right now. So I'm coming just sharing from my experience of the past 2 weeks of living with this text and longing for me to step into more and more of what Moses was like. And maybe for you today, you could go, okay, I want a deeper taste of what happened between 3 and 33 for Moses. So these 10 things that just give us a little backstory from chapter 3 to 33. So the first one, Moses killed an Egyptian taskmaster, just like I just said, and had to run away from that country to save his own neck. There was a hit on him. You can't do that work. And he's running for his life. And God told Moses to go back to that very place that could get him killed for what he did. Second thing, between 3 and 33, God told Moses he would be with him. And Moses was being asked to trust God. Number 3, very similar. God told Moses his name. And his name was, I am who I am, which means I'll be the God who is with you. And again, Moses was being asked to trust this God. He didn't even know him yet. Number 4, Moses conceded to go to Egypt to face off with the Pharaoh of the most powerful nation on the earth, a man who had at his very disposal, all he had to do is say the word and Moses would be undone. And God was saying, I'm bigger than Pharaoh. I'm stronger than Pharaoh. I've got the ability to protect you. Trust me, I'll go with you. Number 5. These are all between chapter 3 and 33. After Moses performed God performed one powerful act after another to convince the Pharaoh to let the Israelites go. Moses had to deal with the Israelites who complained about one thing after another. And I mean one thing after another. Why did you bring us out here in the wilderness? They saw the Egyptian army coming their way. Their backs are up against the Red Sea. Why did you bring us out here, Moses, to just die in the wilderness? It's the first one. The sea opens up. They walk across the other side. Why did you bring us out here, Moses? We had food over in Egypt, enough to fill our mouths and our children. No food out here. God sends manna, a bread, down from heaven. Every morning they had enough to gather up and eat. We're tired of eating meat, Moses. And so God sends quail, and they begin to eat the flesh of the quail. And then they find themselves in a place called Marah. And it's like, Moses, why? This water's bitter. There's no water to drink. We're going to die of thirst out here. And God supplies a piece of wood that he throws into the water. The water becomes sweet to drink. And then they find themselves at a place called Rephidim with no water. Again, Moses, what are you doing? And God, one thing after another, he provides for them. Number 7 here. Moses met God up on Mount Sinai, again between chapter 3 and 33. And what we know is the Ten Commandments are given to Moses there. This is incredible. That God is in conversation like we can be with one another with Moses and hands these to Moses to take on down the mountain. Number 8, Moses saw God provide the food, the manna, the water, that got sweet in Marah and came out of the rock at Rephidim. Direction for them, move here next, and deliverance from one situation after another. Moses, I'll be the God who's going to be with you. How do I know that? That's my name. It's who I am. And Moses has watched him do it again and again and again and again. So he is absolutely convinced this is who God is. Number 9. Moses developed a unique relationship with God where it was said of him, he speaks with God as though he is face to face. Now, this isn't normal, right? It's just not. That most of us don't have that sort of relation. This is a unique relationship that Moses has with God face to face, and he's bringing this message to the Israelite nation. And number 10, through all of this, Moses came to know, not just know about. And we can know about a lot of stuff. I know about some things. I know about that person. Never met him. I just know a smattering about this kind of stuff. But to know it, Moses came to know God. Was a God of his word. By experience, he came to know that God was truly with him. This is who he said he would be, and he has been. He said that was his name. It is his name. It's who he is. I find this absolutely fascinating. That in chapter 3, we find this young Moses. I'm not talking chronology. I'm talking about experience with God. I'm talking about knowing God. We find him saying, you want me to do what? You want me to go back to Egypt? No, I'm the wrong guy. I don't have what it takes to do that. And God speaks to him and says, I'll be with you. I promise I'll be with you. Yeah. I hear you saying that, but how do I know you're actually going to be with me? Well, it's my name. It's who I am. It's my very character. I'm that person. This is chapter 3. And then he ends up going, and all that stuff that we just listed, plus a whole lot more, happens between 3 and 33, to the point where Moses is going, I got it. I understand. I've been through some really hard stuff. In fact, at Rephidim, those people, they got to the point where they actually wanted to stone me. They wanted to kill me there, and you showed up in the middle of that, and you saw fit to protect me, to deliver me. You have been true to me, and I now experience from 3 to 33 all of what you were telling me about who you are. You're a God who is with us. And then in chapter 33, now Moses, verse 1 here, leave this place, you and the people, you. Wait a minute. Catch that? God said, this is chapter 3. I'm going to deliver my people out of Israel. I'm sending you, but I'm going to do it. Moses is saying, I can't do it. I know, I'll be with you, but now this thing's like flipped on the head 30 chapters later, and he's saying, the people you brought up out of Egypt and go up to the land I promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I'll send an angel before you to drive out the Canaanites, the Amorites, the Hittites, all these ites, right? And go up to the land flowing with milk and honey, but I will not go with you. I'm out. I'm not going to go with you because if I go, I'll destroy you. I'll send an angel before you. I mean, this is amazing. 30 chapters of encounter with God. Being a God who is just what he said he was going to be. You're the God that's with me. And now God's saying, nope, I'm going to be the God who is not going with you. And what does Moses do with that? I mean, what do you do with that? After all that Moses has been, what do you do with that? Does Moses just go like, fine then, fine. I don't even know why we did this in the first place. Do you not remember back when we were standing before that bush and we were having that conversation? I was just telling you, I don't want to do this. And you said, no, I'll be with you. And I said, I don't even know your name. And you said, my name is the God that'll be with you. And at the very end of it, do you remember, God, that I just kind of went, eh, can you just send somebody else? Because I don't know you. I don't know if I can trust it's going to turn out all right. So if you want to go your way, and I'll go my way, and we'll just let these people, whatever. That is not what Moses does. What he does is amazing to me. He leans back in because too much has happened between chapter 3 and 33. Too much has taken place on the outside, the experiences that he had. Too much has taken place on the inside because this hard stuff and this experience of God in the middle of all this hard stuff has changed who Moses is to where he's at that place going, I can't go back. Chapter 3 is history. We're at 33. I'm a different man. And I've experienced you in such powerful ways. I can't go back. And what Moses says is if you are pleased with me, he's pleading with God. If you are pleased with me, teach me your ways so that I may know you. Like in the beginning he's saying, I don't know you. Chapter 3, I don't even know your name. And now he's saying, I know you of these 30 chapters of experiences, but I'm not done. I want more. I want to know you more. I've tasted and seen that it's sweet to walk with you. I don't even know how to walk without you anymore. I'm done with that. I give up on that. I want to walk with you. I want to know you. So verse 13, he's saying, I want to know you more. Teach me your ways so that I may know you and continue to find favor with you. Remember God. This is your nation. These are your people. This is incredible to me. It really is. To think about it, chapter 3, if we've got this thing sitting here upside down and Moses is going, I don't know if I can trust you. I don't know who you are. And God's saying, Moses, I'm the God who is with you. That's who I am. And all the way over here to chapter 33 and God's saying, I'm not going with you. Moses is like, that's not who you are. You are the God that is with. You are the God that made that promise. You are the God that has proven yourself to be that. And I am so, so dissatisfied with even the thought of that being done right here and now that I don't even want to go. I know that land's better than this desert that we're in. I know you promised a land that's flowing with milk and honey and it's a rich, fertile land. I don't want to go to that land if you're not going. I just want to know you more. I want to know your ways more. Remember, please, God, that you are the God who is with us, your people. And this relationship is meant for us. And what does God say? The Lord replied, my presence will go with you and I will give you rest. And Moses said to him, if your presence does not go with us, do not send us up from here. Almost like the sigh of relief. Yes, God is going to continue this journey with us and I am going to know him more and more and more. I'd rather it hard with God than easy without God. And then Moses goes on. What he says, I honestly don't know if I fully understand this. I do know that there have been those times in my life and maybe in your life too where because of the stuff that you've gone through, you've prayed some really big prayers. And I've been there a bunch of times where I prayed for somebody that was really close to me that was with some illness or praying for a marriage to be held together and just going, or praying. I remember praying for friends and family members that have gone through whatever it might be that I've really prayed some big, big prayers. And then there are those times because God has been so faithful and so good in my life. Times where I've prayed prayers and maybe you've been there before, like you're done praying and you realize if God answers the prayer that you just asked, it was so big, your life will never be the same again. Like, what did I just ask for? I wonder if Moses' next request was one of those. I think it had been. But that even, he even asked it, tells us that God had done an amazing work in him from chapter 3 to 33. And Moses says these words, "Show me your glory." Now show me your glory. I don't think he knew what he was asking. And if he did, then this guy was actually in a place where he was saying, to know you is so sweet. And to experience you near to me, walking through what I've gone through, facing even this hostile crowd that thought, I thought at one point they would take my life. And you protect, it is so sweet that even if seeing your glory kills me, I'm okay with that. It's really what he's asking. Like he's saying, I've experienced you. You have been with me in powerful ways. I have heard of you with my ears, but I want to go to the place where I see you with my own eyes. And I experience all of your glory, not just a portion of it. And I think sometimes, I know sometimes for me, but sometimes, I think sometimes for us, we just forget how amazing God is, how awesome God is, and that we don't actually have words to describe who God is. We can begin to take a stab at some of that and speak to some of it, but the words that we have, they're not sufficient enough to describe the majesty of who he is. Because God's response to Moses is like, you don't know what you're asking. You don't understand that to see me is to lose your life. My glory's too much. It's too awesome. And that body that you're in cannot handle seeing all of who I am. It's too much for you. So to think about God in all of his majesty is to see him face to face, is to risk losing your life. For no person had ever seen God with his own eyes. And I think about that day when we get to heaven and we're given a new body. And I think maybe that's why. Because these bodies can't handle what we're headed toward. It's going to be so glorious, so amazing, that these bodies are not sufficient to take it all in. And Moses is saying, I've been so close. We've been so intimate. The thought of me leaving with these people and you not coming with, forget it. God, please, you said you would go with. You said you're that. Okay, Moses, I'll go with you. Okay, I got one more. One more asking me. I want to see you in all your glory. This is the loftiest, the largest request. I don't know how big your request of God is, but this one is the loftiest, largest request that was ever made. Charles Spurgeon, a fiery preacher from the 1800s, wrote of this and said, Moses could not have asked for something more from God. This is the greatest stretch of faith that I have ever read or ever heard. It's the greatest request any man could ever make. I beseech thee, Lord, show me your glory. Had he requested a fiery chariot to whirl down from heaven and to take him up, had he asked to cleave to the waters or the floods, that they would drown the nobility of an entire nation, had he prayed to the Almighty to send fire from heaven to consume entire armies, I would have found a parallel to that prayer. But he stands alone in this prayer. I beseech thee, show me thy glory. He stands as a giant among giants, a colossus, even in the days of the mighty men. His request surpasses that of any other human being. I beseech thee, show me your glory. among the lofty peaks, among the summits of a man's prayer that rise like the mountains toward the skies. This is the culminating point. This is the highest elevation of faith that you could ever find. It is the loftiest place of ambition that faith could ever ascend to. It is the topmost pillar of towering structures that confidence ever piled up. I beseech thee, Lord, show me now your glory. I don't want to see you the way I've seen you only. I want more. I thirst and I hunger for more. It consumes me. I want to see you. I don't have a lot more to say here this morning, because I don't think much more needs to be said than what has been said. Between 3 and 33, we can all see it. Something amazing happened inside of Moses as a result of God using that hard time to begin to show himself to Moses, to the point where Moses asked, he put out the biggest request that any man could ever ask. I don't even care. I'm so lost in who you are that even if it consumes me, I'm okay with that. I just want to see you. And I just want to leave us with one thing today. And it's just really what Moses was asking in chapter 13. I don't know how to get to chapter 33, verse 13. I don't know how to get to that request. I want to see your glory, without first asking what's in verse 13. I want to know you more. I want to experience you more. I just want to know your ways. Remember, God, that the people of old you were in relationship with, the people here, he's still in relationship with us. Remember who we are in relationship with each other. And if you found favor with us, which he has, that favor was bestowed on us on a cross some 2,000 years ago when God showed he favored us. Showed that he loved us, that he's crazy about us, that he came out of a grave for us and said, made a promise, I will be with you even to the very end of the age, till this world is done or you're no longer in this world. I'll be with you. And then he said, I'm coming back to bring you to myself so that where I am, you may all, he's made all this that we might just be like Moses and say, I want more. I don't even know what that means right now, but I'm done walking in that place where I could leave from here to there and act like you're not with me, but I don't want that anymore. I just want to know you more. And I want to be more known by you. If we could just ask that one thing, it's not simple, it's not small, it's really big. But if we could just move, I don't know where you're at in your life from chapter 3 to 33, but somewhere in there, if you can just say, God, can you be real to me? Can you show yourself more? I want more of you. We would get hungry for Jesus like that. Let's pray together. And so we make this request of you. For some of us, it might be the largest request we've ever made because we've never made it. And we understand that you love us. We understand that you came on the cross to die for us. You rose victorious for each one of us. You offer forgiveness to every single one of us. And for us to say, I want to know you, is to know that deep inside of us and to receive that gift from you. And for others who have gone through some hardship in life that you've used to shape and to mold us, and you've been so good to us through that, we're just asking for more today, and so we're going to keep it really simple and really deep. Show us your ways. Show us yourself. Remind us when we rise in the morning, as we go throughout the day, as we put our heads to the pillow. Give us the ability to see you in the small and the big things, that we might know that we know that we know You are a God that has given yourself to each one of us personally. And we pray this in your name. Amen. So once in a while, stuff will hit me after I've preached that I've not really thought about before. And this is one of those mornings. And I was just sharing with Jeremy that when I think about the life of Moses, this guy asked for something so large that God said, I can't give that to you. It's too much for you. And what God allowed him to do is just to see where he was. And that was enough that Moses saw the back of it. And all he saw was enough that he was lit up. Everybody around him recognized this guy has been with God in a different sort of way. I was thinking, there are a couple ways we could be known when this life is said and done. We could be known as people that didn't ask enough of God, or we just asked too much of God. I want to be known as somebody that has asked too much of God. That's too much for you. So my desire is to keep growing in that area, that we just keep leaning into our relationship with Christ. May he bless you and keep you. And God's people said, amen.